Hey, welcome to the third show. This is the Street Fight. It's still, I guess you could call it that. We didn't know how this show was going to be different, and we kind of just discovered recently that I'm going to do it. It's just going to be my show, and Brett will have episodes when he feels like doing it, or when he finds an interview that he wants to do, and I'm sure he'll be in episodes of this with me because I'll probably need him. But most of these are going to be me talking to my friends because, I don't know, just because I can, really. This week I have Dan K MTL, or as we call him on this show, Dank Metal. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you? You guys have blown up a lot since the last time I was on the show.
I know, you've been listening since we made no dollars a month. Since we paid to put this show on.
Yeah. I think maybe I started listening like maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't even vape at that time. I only smoked weed.
Yeah, exactly. And you guys, you and Brett both lived in Ohio, and now you're back both in Ohio, right?
I know, you did. You listened when we both lived in Ohio, and then you listened when he moved away, and now we're both back here. We're both back in our natural habitat together. Well, he's back in his natural Midwestern habitat.
Yep.
It's you've been out here a lot too though lately. Like I catch you on there, like out in Pennsylvania and stuff like that, and I'm like, shit, Dan's getting around the country again. He's coming back down. Were you missing your like redneck roots or something?
I always do, man. Like my mom lives in Maryland now, so I go back there, but I still got like a lot of friends in Pittsburgh, and flights to Pittsburgh from here are pretty cheap, so I get down there pretty much any like, you know, flimsy excuse I have to go to Pittsburgh, I do it, just because, you know, I gotta be back in the motherland.
We're doing a show there soon.
I know, I saw that. I'm gonna spread the word with people I know down there. Hopefully get a couple people to check it out.
We might have some very big guests at that one. Like, I can't say 100% that they're gonna be there, but everybody that knows what happens when we have very big guests show up at our show probably knows who I'm talking about.
Ah, nice. Man, that's all. Yeah, I think, have you been to Pittsburgh before? I think you'd really like it.
I've been there. We're actually bringing our families, and we're staying for 3 days. This is the first one we decided to bring them with us because it's not around, like, a rioting occasion or anything like that. I mean, yeah, so we're going to spend 3 days in Pittsburgh, which is, I mean, more than I've spent in any city that wasn't like D.C. or Philly for work in a very long time.
It's a fun city. I mean, there's like a lot of cool, like, little, like, you know, dive bars. Beer is cheap. I mean, you don't care about this, but you can still smoke in the bar, which is really important to me.
Brett and my friend, one of Brett and I's mutual friends found a bar in Columbus that still lets you smoke in it. And they're not needed. It's like called Buddies or something like that. Like, it's just a place that not many people go to. So they're just like, fuck it, just let them smoke in there.
I think in Pennsylvania, it's if the bar doesn't serve food, you're allowed to smoke. But if they serve food, you're not, which I mean, seems pretty fair to me.
Philly is the only place we went to, and it felt very smoke-free. I mean, I guess if you're in a major city, there's a smoking ban. I guess it even goes down to minor cities, because it's, like, banned here, too.
Yeah, and they recently decriminalized weed in Pittsburgh, too, so that's pretty cool.
I wonder what that leads to. That never leads to what you think it's, because it's, like, basically decriminalized in Columbus. It has been since the 90s, so they don't, like, chase people around for it or anything like that, but, like, they would bust you if you sold it.
The way it is up here is, like, it's still illegal, but, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, if I get weed from, they're in British Columbia, there's dispensaries there, and they don't really care. I mean, there's like 30 different websites, so you order and then you pay with a bank transfer, and then they mail it to you, and it's at your door in like 2 days.
God.
And the police know about them, but they turn a blind eye to them. So it's pretty cool. I mean, 2 days, and it's the same. I mean, I was getting weed from, you know, a guy here, and it's like the same price for like way better stuff, and it's, you know, delivered right to your door. So I've been doing that lately, and they got everything. I mean, you can buy, like, you know, I buy these preloaded vape pens from there, and then they're great.
I buy that. Those are every drug dealer in Columbus there for a while after they legalized it, and Michigan started bringing, they were selling those vape pens for $90 a piece. Like, I tried, that guys tried to sell me those so many times.
Yeah, like, the dumb thing is, right, like, the new prime minister who was elected last year says he's going to legalize weed.
Yeah.
But, like, I saw, he's so lame. I mean, he's like all talk. I mean, I keep getting this promoted post on Facebook where it's, you know, sign this petition if you think marijuana should be legalized, and it's posted by the prime minister's official account. And it's like, dude, you're the prime minister. Just make it legal.
Yeah.
You don't need, you got elected. You don't need the signatures anymore.
Is he allowed?
Just do it.
I mean, obviously I wouldn't know. I guess if the president just says, like, even in the United States, if the president just said, like, weed's legal now, then I think that's probably enough in
There's
a way.
I mean, Obama, I think under Obama, I think the Justice Department said that basically they wouldn't devote any resources to prosecuting it. So they didn't make, I mean, that's basically what they did, I think. I mean, I don't know how long that's going to last with the Sessions guy, but
I think it's over.
They want to do it, there's ways.
I think it's over for us now. You know what I mean? Like, I think as far as, like, recreational marijuana, we're going to have to push that stone back up that hill in 4 years.
Man, that's not, I mean, there's gotta be some kind of uproar just with all the money that it's bringing in now. Like, and I don't know, all these, I mean, there's just a whole infrastructure now of, like, there's businesses and growers and things like that. I mean, it seems like it would just be such a hassle to dismantle and do everything like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's possible that, like, now that even the cities and states are getting taxes from it and shit, that they'll be like, whoa, 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 you can't take money away from us.
Yeah. Like, literally nobody wants it to be, like, you know, made illegal like now. I mean, like, nobody cares anymore. It's like almost to, like, gay marriage levels of people just saying, look, just give up.
Man. It's probably more I think the last poll I saw was over 60%. It's like, just in that 40%, I tend to think is full of shit anyway. Like, they're just saying something that they think they should say.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've never met anybody who wants, I mean, like,
but I say that a lot too, but me and you have, like, basically only hung out with druggies for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I still follow my hometown newspaper, and it's near a college town near Penn State. So they're, you know, the cops there still do, like, you know, undercover operations to bust weed dealers. And whenever they post a story about it, like, all the comments are just from people going, like, you know, like, we have, like, people, like, constantly ODing on heroin and stuff like that. And this is like what they're going after. So, I mean, it seems like even people that don't smoke think there's probably probably better ways to go about it.
That's what that actually in Columbus, in Port Columbus Airport, that happened today. They made a bust of 49 kilos of marijuana. They actually phrased it as 49,000 grams.
Oh, they always do. I love that shit, how they always exaggerate it to make it seem, I mean, well, we got like $65 million worth of marijuana off the streets.
49 million or 49,000 grams is maybe that's so, I guess the word would be craven, I think, because they also, they spend a lot, they actually, at the end of the post where they bragged about it, they said, sorry, dopers.
Ah, oh, fuck. God, I hate them when the police do, like, the smug thing. Like, people on Twitter, people are always getting mad at the NYPD accounts because they're always posting stuff like, oh, we got this, you know, they pulled over a guy and all he had was, like, $2,000 and like a switchblade or something like that.
Yeah.
They act like they got, like, a suitcase nuke off the street.
I actually saw one of them earlier this week, the NYPD, where they busted two rowdy bike riders. Like, they were standing in front of two confiscated bikes. They said that the people that were riding them were riding them in a rowdy way.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, Brooklyn Juggler was pissed about that because You know, I don't know if you remember this, but he got fined when he lived in New York for riding his unicycle on the street.
Yeah, on the sidewalk, wasn't it?
On the sidewalk.
He said he's not allowed to ride it on a sidewalk.
Yeah, and he was on like I don't know, Stephen Colbert or something like that.
He sued him. He sued the city, and they put him on Colbert to talk to him. Yeah, he said, great job to our NCOs for making two arrests for reckless bicycle riding. And the bikes are kids' bikes, too, man.
Yeah, they were like the little, like, short, like, freestyle-looking bikes.
Yeah, oh, man. That is, like, I mean, that's a lot of what they waste their time doing, really. Like, they make it sound like there's somebody hiding behind every corner trying to kill them. But really, most of the time, they're hassling people for riding their bikes in a dangerous way.
Yeah, I mean, they have that complex where they're like, police is the most dangerous job in the world. And then it's all just stuff like this. And they're so touchy, like, how annoyed they get whenever the football players were like kneeling and stuff like that. Like how they're just such, like, they're so whiny about it.
Babies. They really, wait, you're right too about the football players. You're like, they're like, the football players kneel and they're like, the Rams want to kill the police department. Like they act like they're the same thing.
That kind of brings me to something that I had mentioned I wanted to talk about, which was the fake bikers that love law enforcement.
Well, now that I've finally accepted that so many people in law enforcement are probably Nazis anyway already. I mean, bikers could have infiltrated law enforcement, I guess. Either that or law enforcement has infiltrated biking, you know?
I started seeing this, like they have their own, sometimes you see stories about, like these, you know, riding clubs that have, like, they're made up of, like, former law enforcement officers, and I was, you know, again on my hometown newspaper website, and I saw some guy comment, and he was like, he looked like a biker. He had, like, you know, he had his picture was him with his Harley and his, like, and his leather and stuff like that with his patch, but his occupation was like an ex-prison guard at the state prison. So it was like one of these fake biker gangs made up of law enforcement or whatever.
There are a lot of, like, most of the bikers I know now, since it's become sort of a thing that you can just buy into, because that's really what it is now, is that, like, you can just buy the biker set. Like, yeah, I'm a biker. I, you know, some guy that runs a successful, like, Amazon business.
Yeah, you just, all you need is you have to wear like a bandana and then those mirrored sunglasses.
And you have to... You have to respect all authority. Like, that's the new biker persona now, is like, I just respect the president so much, and I respect the police so much.
Yeah, I mean, like, on Twitter the other day, there was something, I forget, the NRA was doing something, and some guy replied to it and was like, oh, you know, it's like, violent leftists are at it again. And I asked him, because the guy's like profile picture was like what looked like a logo for like a biker gang, and I was like, dude, your picture is like an outlaw biker gang. It's like, I mean, you're talking about, like, people who don't follow the law. Like, are you just like a poser or what? And he's like, oh, it's just a club.
Oh yeah, I wonder if he rides a bike though. I wonder if he rides a motorcycle even. When Brett and I were in Maryland when we were staying in our hotel, like 50 miles away from DC for the inauguration, there were a bunch of bikers for Trump staying there, and they had their bikes on trailers. They didn't ride their motorcycles there. They put them on trailers and brought them to the hotel, and then rode from the hotel to the inauguration.
Yeah, like it's so funny. Like the fake biker culture is like one of the funniest things to me, because here in Montreal, the bikers are not like there's bikers here, but the bikers here, like, a lot of them don't ride bikes, but they're more like the mafia. like they run like all, you know, they run drugs and prostitution and things like that. And like a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago, there was a war between the Hells Angels and the other biker gang, the Rock Machine, and they were like bombing police stations and like and like assass like the one like a like boss of the Hells Angels was like incarcerated. And he decided to get back at the police by having guys assassinate prison guards.
Yeah, these guys are just, the guys here are just, people that really, Sons of Anarchy really, that really is the thing that turned a lot of these people into bikers. You can tell. Because they all basically have the Sons of Anarchy aesthetic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can buy all the Sons of Anarchy gear, Redwood Original or whatever.
You can buy cuts. Yeah, I've seen people walking around Columbus in really clean jeans and Sons of Anarchy cuts. And I'm like, what is that? You're wearing a costume right now.
Yeah, it's like biker LARPing.
It is, yeah. But it's also above, they don't even pretend to be doing criminal. There's nothing, it doesn't harken back at all to biker gangs other than the fact that they draw these really cool, or they Photoshop these, they use a bunch of clip art to make a cool symbol.
Yeah, I mean, any knowledge of actual bikers, I mean, they're like dirt bags. They're all addicted to meth and they're not the clean cut type people that you know, people that imitate them now seem to be.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt worried at all about the Bikers for Trump at any of the events that we went to over, because we, you know, I went to everything this year. And it was around the Bikers of Trump for Trump every time. And they seemed pathetic, really, to me. Like, it was like my dad's bowling team. And I just wasn't intimidated by them at all.
Yeah, I mean, like years ago, a guy used to get coke from his hookup was like an actual biker gang. And he said, meeting up with them to get stuff was, terrifying. He said they were, really scary dudes.
Probably mean too. Were they were probably just straight up as soon as you, because I've never dealt with bikers. There's no way. I was so far away from any sort of biker activity. The white criminals I had to worry about were like Lonnie's. Like, they were just squirrely guys. Like, they didn't have money. They could never buy a motorcycle.
Yeah. I mean, just some, you know, you hang out in a trailer park for 7 hours waiting for some guy to get his script or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. That was most, I was so far at the bottom of the dirtbag rung when it came to my drug tech. 'Cause I didn't sell. I was too afraid to sell drugs.
No, same here. Yeah. I never had the right mentality for that.
I wanted to, I always thought it would be great to have a weed business, but everybody I know that ended up being a weed dealer seems like they really hate it.
Yeah. And I mean, I just thinking back, two of the big weed dealers in my town, they ended up getting hooked on heroin anyway. So they didn't really lie. I mean, most of the big weed dealers I know either just quit and just became normies, or they just got, you know, moved on to heroin eventually.
Most of the weed dealers I knew work at bars now, basically. Probably still sell weed.
Yeah, I mean, my one friend who is a pretty, you know, pretty, I mean, decent amount, like quarter pounds and things like that. I mean, he's just like a regular. He works in the you know, oil fracking industry now.
Everybody there works there, is what it seems like. When you drive through so much of Pennsylvania, so even more than Southern Ohio, is just like all fracking advertising everywhere. Like, every single facet of the fracking industry has an advertisement on the freeways of Pennsylvania between Ohio and when we go to DC.
Oh yeah, it's huge. I mean, my hometown wasn't in the fracking area, but maybe if you go 45 minutes west, you start to get in there. And I mean, my friend's mom was dating like an oil, like a fracking guy she met, because they all would just come down and they all stay in motels, and I partied with them a couple times, just a bunch of guys from like Texas and West Virginia and stuff like that, just living in motels like in Pennsylvania, and then just doing whatever.
That's like cowboys now. Like, those areas that pop up around fracking remind me of Deadwood. Like the
yeah, exactly. I mean, my friend went out to whatever, I forget what that town's called in North Dakota there, to work in the natural gas or whatever it's called, and he said it was like Deadwood. I mean, it was just like this all dudes, no women, just like, you know, people were always getting stabbed outside the bar. Everybody's throwing like tons of money around. They don't have anywhere to spend it. They're all, and the work is so like terrible. It's like, you know, minus 30 degrees, like with the wind chill. And you just get drunk after that. And I don't know, he said it was one of the worst places he's ever worked in his life.
Yeah. It sounds like whenever I hear about Southern Ohio stuff, it's always fascinating to me, because they'll say like they'll talk about how like these small little things, like they're just like towns that pop up where there's one bar in the town, and they just kind of they overwhelm the bar while they're there, and everything, because like it pumps a bunch of money into the town. But like, man, the type of dudes that I worked with, the type of guys that work in that world, you know what I mean? Like, when I worked at the cable company and the roof and roofing, which is like the most
oh yeah
like that, I only did that for 3 months. I can't say that I'm like an expert in the roofing world, but those are some hard dudes that do that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I know a guy who is a roofer, and they would be up on the roof, and they would just like, if you go, because they were working on this building near my friend's house, and we went out just to say what's up to him one day, and there was just this, they were up on the roof, and then there's this giant pile of beer cans like on the side of the house, because they were just drinking up there and throwing all that, which was, I don't know how like the person who's whatever building they were working on didn't like take issue with that, but there was just like this just huge pile of just Coors Light cans, like just right beside the house. They were just throwing them off the roof.
You're like really invisible to them if you're roofing. And I'll tell you this too. If you're doing it for a cheap enough price, they're gonna look past the beer cans. I was just thinking about this the other day. Like my back when my in-laws lived in Columbus, I was at their house one time, and they had two guys come up, and they were like, we'll seal your driveway like really cheap, but they did that thing where they like, they don't really seal the driveway though.
Oh yeah, that's a you always see things in the paper about that. It's like a scam that comes around.
Yeah, well, it's like the guys that, a lot of the guys that I still know that are still like using a lot of drugs, they will go out during the summer and just offer to paint addresses on the curbs or on mailboxes, and they'll water the paint way down. So basically, like, the next, I mean, it doesn't stay. It's shitty. It's done in the worst possible way. But, I mean, that'll make you enough money to get whatever you got to get at the end of the day.
Have you ever heard of the meat scam?
I have seen the meat guys. What is the meat scam?
Well, I think it's the same thing. It was on Trailer Park Boys too. But I actually had a friend who did that. I mean, you steal meat from the supermarket, and or you somebody steals it from the supermarket. He wasn't the actual guy that would steal it. The other guy was. But then they would just sell the meat door to door. So you just go. So you just go in some neighborhood, and you have you have a cooler full of like steaks and roasts and things like that, and then you just sell them door to door. Like, you just knock on the door, hey, you want some cheap meat? It's all stolen.
I actually, in all over the suburb, I don't see them as much where I live now, but I live in like, a suburban enclave in the middle of the city, you know what I mean? So that a guy, they wouldn't ride. This is where they come to get trash. Like, you know, the guys that go around and collect trash in the alleys.
Yeah,
like washing machines and shit like that, and then they resell them on Craigslist. This, I live in the neighborhood where they come to do that, like get into trash. Okay, but they would never come here to sell meat out of their truck. But the neighborhood I grew up in, there were guys that would sell vegetables out of the back of a truck, and there were guys that would sell meat. I never tied together the guys that steal a shitload of meat from the grocery store to those refrigerated trucks. Or the trucks with a chest, an ice chest in the back. Those also I used to see. But that makes sense, because when I worked at the grocery store, they were really fucking careful about letting you know, like, sometimes a motherfucker's going to come in here and just run out with a shopping cart full of meat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other guy who was like his partner or whatever was the guy who would steal it. But I guess, yeah, he would just go in with a shopping cart, and then just, I mean, in supermarkets, I mean, they're not that, I mean, unless you're stealing like razor blades or something like that. I mean, it's pretty easy to steal from a supermarket.
They're not paying attention. That's what Brett and I learned when we talked about shoplifting for the whole month of November. It was kind of like, you know, now that I think about it, if I'm standing in Walmart and I'm like, there's almost no chance somebody's looking at me, but we're raised, at least scumbags like me, like, we think there's cameras everywhere in the store, and we think they can, like, read the date on a dime, because they'll tell us that, you know?
Man, I was, like, you know, it was, like, you know, like, eight, nine years ago, whatever, I used to steal stuff from Walmart a lot, and I was just, not too long ago, I was in Walmart, and I had to buy, like, these expensive little light bulbs for my bathroom lights, and they were expensive, and I was like, oh, man, I should just steal these, and then I was looking around, and I don't remember where all the, because I used to remember where all the blind spots were in the store, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man, I don't really remember where they are. And I, you know, I'm like, normie with a good job now. I'd feel like a real idiot if I got caught. So I just paid for him like a pussy.
I've walked out. The last time I did a real stealing thing was I was at Whole Foods. This is going to make me look real bad. I had my wife and my daughter with me. And we ordered one of their horrible pizzas. The guy handed it to me, and I was just like, let's just walk out the fucking door with it. And we just walked out with it, and they didn't, like, say anything. And I was like, man, we could steal all the time. Nobody would ever suspect us if we just worked as a team, a guy, a dad, a wife, and his daughter.
You know, talking about scams, last night I was just thinking about this. I don't know, I hadn't thought about it in a couple of years, but When I was like 19, 20, I came up here to Montreal to work in the summer, and the place I worked was a relative's husband had a Montreal back then was known for telemarketing scams, and there was like a hotbed. I mean, there was like so many of these little rooms with a bunch of phones in them and various scams. So I worked at this place for two summers in a row. And it was, what you did was, you'd call businesses, and then you'd say, this is, you know, I used a fake name, and I'm calling to update your business listing. And just need to, you know, check all your information still correct. And then they would say, oh, yeah, you know, what, if, you know, if they'd ask you questions, they'd be like, is this something we use? And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, you've been using this for a while. It's your business listing you use to, like, gain more business or whatever. And then, you know, when they say yes, then another guy calls them back and records them agreeing to it. And then you send them a bill for $600, and you send them this worthless CD-ROM just with, like, a bunch of names and addresses of businesses and phone numbers in it. So you're actually sending them a product. And then you call them to collect on it. You say, look, you need to pay this bill. This is for your, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you would just badger them. The one summer I did the actual, you call it sales, but you're not really selling anything. You're just tricking them into thinking that it's a product they already use, and you're just updating it so you can send them a bill for the updated version. And the collections department was like twice the size of sales, which kind of tells you something. it was such a fun place to work. Like, it was a total scam, but like, I was 19, like there was like two separate people in the office that sold weed. Like, you know, the manager, the guy that owned it would always just throw money around, buy booze for the office. And like, you know, you just take breaks to smoke weed all day. And it was probably the best job you can have when you're 19. Like, it was a really good experience, and it was fun, you know, and I would like, you know, you could call whoever you wanted. So I would like, you know, I remember I sold to like two Halliburton, this was during, you know, the Bush years or whatever. And I sold to like two Halliburton offices, and like stuff like that. And I had my friend call up this place I used to work in my hometown who fired me, so I had him sell them one. But I just sit around and just, you know, call people up and try to scam them out of $600.
Brett tells a story when Brett and I first started hanging out, when his job was basically a scam where they would sell people insurance leads. Like, that was the whole company, was just like, and like, you see, I'm like, I wanted to know everything about it. You know, the only call center job I had, I worked with a bunch of crazy people, right? Like, you know, I worked with this weed dealer who, like, I went to his house and he had two, remember when those Mitsubishi TVs, those fucking enormous, like 55 inch Mitsubishi TVs were the thing?
Yeah.
I got to this guy's house and he had three of them in his like two bedroom apartment living room. Like, you could barely move. There was less seating than TVs in there. It was fucking crazy. And I was like, "Where'd you get that?" And he said, he put up weed money to get this guy's drive-thru started. This guy started a drive-thru business, and the guy paid him back in TVs. And I just remember going, or like, I worked with a guy that would go home. He would be like, "You want to come with me on lunch?" And I go to his house and watch him, because I couldn't be on the phone and stoned. It just seemed so,
it seemed like fucking hell. Yeah, I was just, because I worked a lot at if I could find like a call center somewhere, I mean that was where I worked for, you know, the bulk of my 20s is did various call centers, and that was the only real scammy one I worked. The rest were just like normal, like, you know, doing surveys or customer service or stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it was really hard if you were stoned, because I would just zone out on the phone, and I would just, you know, forget what I was supposed to be saying and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like, I mean, working in a call center is you get a desk, and guys like us, guys like me or guys like you, I don't think we ever expected to get a desk, and it seemed like the only way we were ever going to get one is in a call center.
Yeah, and it feels like, I worked pretty much every type of, I mean, restaurants and factories and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it was, if you had a desk, and I mean, and most of them didn't, but if you also had internet too, I mean, you were basically set if you had internet too. A lot of places would like disable the internet at those places.
The only one I worked at had internet and let us use it while we weren't on calls. We weren't supposed to be on it when we were on calls. But like, when we weren't, we were allowed to use it. But we used it while we were on them too. But like, yeah, man, it was kind of like one of the jobs I've had that I thought was one of the crazier ones was that I worked at Chuck E. Cheese for like a year and a month. And the people that work in the back at Chuck E. Cheese are fucking crazy.
Oh man, most restaurants are, but what's Chuck E. Cheese?
I mean, it's just like most restaurants, but I think there's something about, first of all, I think there's something about pizza. Just everybody that makes pizza is a little bit crazier than everybody else in the restaurant industry, I think. I think that's the crate, because it's the easiest job you can do.
Yeah, no, that's accurate, I think.
Have you worked, did you ever work at pizza places in the past?
No, I worked at like two restaurants, but they were just like regular, like small town restaurants.
I always think it's crazy, people. Like, if you didn't tell me you worked at a call center, I would have been very nervous about you, because I'm always like, man, you never worked in people that never worked in fast food are I guess maybe fascinating to me, but I also think, and this is really fucking unfair to people that haven't worked in fast food, but I always think that they think they're better than me because they were like, I'm not going to lower myself to fast food.
I worked fast food not long. I worked at McDonald's for maybe like 4 months whenever I was in like 11th grade, and I really didn't like it. I remember it was so dumb, because like it was at the end of the night, and I just like I took like a bunch of chicken nuggets home, and like somebody saw it, and the manager was like, you can't take those home. Like, I was like, what, dude? Like, you're just gonna throw them away? And someone told me it was because the manager takes them home.
Oh,
I was like, come on.
I hated it. You're right though. Like, the rule there is you can have a free meal if you're at work, but you can't take nothing with you. If you're going to leave, like, you can't take any food out of the place.
Yeah. And I remember it was the end of the summer and school was starting anyway. And I really hated it. And I was like, I just called in one day and I was like, hey, I'm not coming in, 'cause I quit.
It was my first job. I worked there for about 3 months, and the way that I got the job was they fucking came to the high school and sat in the lunchroom and was like, hey, where you want to fill out an application? And I was like, you know, fuck it. Yeah. You know, and keep in mind, like, we were smoking in the bathroom during lunch and causing all kinds of trouble. And then they were like, you want to just sit down and talk to us for a second? And then they were like, you're hired. They just like hired me in the lunchroom of my high school, and then I got in there and I worked there for 3 months. Like, over that time, like, I got robbed by one of the other employees.
my first job was I was a bag boy at a Mennonite owned grocery store. And it was like the only grocery store in my town too, but it was all right. I mean, for a first job, it was fine. I used to have to restock the dairy cooler, so I'd go in the back there and I'd inhale the whipped cream or the nitrous out of the whipped cream cans, and you know, you get like a quick you know, 1 minute like whip it buzz from that. So that was pretty cool.
That's fine. Like, I was at Kroger one day and I found my wife and I ran into an old friend from high school, and he was fucking huffing the stuff and then just leaving them in the magazine aisle. They were just lined up along this row where he huffed the nitrous out of them. I'm like, damn, dude. He was just hanging around the store doing it. That was like his thing for the day. I mean, this is a guy that I grew up with that after we had lost touch, he fucking... I don't know why I can't let this go, but he robbed a barber like a Supercuts, and I just got so annoyed by it, because I was like, why would you rob a Supercuts?
Man, I know a guy I grew up with. He robbed a convenience store at gunpoint, but the convenience store was also owned by the guy who owned the local gun shop.
Oh shit.
And this guy was not like he was addicted to heroin, so he was kind of desperate. So like, I guess that's why he did it, because he was like a real mild mannered guy. Like, he wasn't like a tough guy or anything like that. And the guy just kind of pushed his hand away and pulled out his own gun and then just held him there till the police came and went to prison for like 5 years or something like that. And it was so weird because I'd saw him like the day before. And he was like, his girlfriend was like this like rich girl who was just about to graduate Penn State, and he was like going to move to Pittsburgh, and she was going to give him, her dad was going to give him a job. And I guess he didn't want to go.
Yeah. But that might be exactly it. Yeah. That's fucking crazy, man. These guys that robbed the Supercuts did it with a knife, 'cause they knew they weren't going to have a gun. They were, one of the guys was getting a haircut. And then the other two, like, robbed the place after they were done getting a haircut. They all went to jail, too, for, like,
a year.
And it was just like, you know what, man? People that are cutting hair aren't expecting to get robbed. You can, like, leave them out of your games.
Yeah. I mean, I know a guy who robbed a pharmacy at knife point. But, I mean, a pharmacy, I mean, that's that's kind of, I mean, they kind of expect that, I guess.
Oh my God, yeah, they're, I mean, like, in Columbus, those things are getting robbed. Like, if you can turn on the news every night and see a pharmacy getting robbed now. The opiates are, because they've cracked down on prescribing them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're so fucking hard. Back when I was using a lot of painkillers, the pills were already hard to get. And they have only I mean, that was when they were supposedly flooding the world with painkillers is when I got hooked on them. But like,
yeah, I was like right at the end of the era where they had those green Oxy 80s like everywhere.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so now they've made it even harder to get. I don't know how you can maintain. This is why I went to rehab, Dan. This is exactly why. When it became hard to get the pills and it felt bad when I didn't have them,
yeah,
like, it started to outweigh the joy I was getting out of taking the pills, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, most people in that situation, they just switch to heroin, obviously.
Oh, yeah, 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 but I don't think I had a heroin hookup, really. Like, I would have had to go look for heroin, and like, I didn't have anybody offering it to me, you know?
Man, I saw. Did you see in Ohio now that elephant opiate starting to show up? I guess I don't know if it's the police. Well, that there's this stuff called carfentanil or something like that, and it's like 1,000 times stronger than fentanyl, and you can order it. You order it from like a lab in like there's labs in China that make this stuff, and they'll send it to you. But like one speck of it can make you OD.
Oh my God! Don't. I think they just need to make Oxy 10s available to people.
Yeah, I think that would solve. I think that would solve a lot of problems. But yeah, I mean, and they start getting the, because I saw it was, I forget, it was the whatever county Cincinnati's in. They arrested a guy for cutting his heroin with that, and it caused like 30 ODs or something like that.
That's been happening a lot in Ohio. Like it even in Franklin County where we are, that was Hamilton County, but in Franklin County where we are, it's exactly. I mean, like sometimes, like, you know, at least once a month on a weekend, there are like 20 people went to the hospital. 70 people went to the hospital.
Yeah, I saw that. It happens a lot in Western PA too. Like, it's nuts. And like, I mean, the guy. So you order this, like, you know, one gram of this carfentanil stuff is like 10,000 doses or something like that. And the thing is, like, you try to mix it with your regular dope or whatever. But you can't like ensure that like it's all spread out evenly, right? So like somebody might get one, you just drop one speck of it into it, and then you, like, you know, one guy gets all of it, and then, you know, there's, and these guys don't have labs, it's just some guy in his kitchen, you know, so it's like incredibly dangerous and stupid.
Yeah, and I know that, like, that we probably have listeners that would say, because I definitely know I have people from my past who would say that an Oxy 10 isn't enough, but like, man, you can make that enough. It's still a lot, right? Do you remember when we would get 10s, I would be able to get away with taking like 3 of them in a night, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if, you know, I mean, I mean, back in those days, I mean, I think at the worst, I would do like a whole 80, and I would be pretty good. But it was, you know, they were like 50, 60 bucks at that point. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it builds up fast. But yeah, I think for most people, I mean, if they just had 10s, I think they'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I knew a guy that it built up. It does, tolerance builds up, right? But I think that, like, you got to outweigh that with, like, how safe, because it gets so dangerous after a while. The green ones were, the green Oxycontins were those 40s or 80s?
The 80s were green. I think the 40s were, like, pink or blue or something like
I
that.
I saw a guy take 3 of those.
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
Like, he had them in his hand, and he fucking looked right at me. He looked me right in the face and fucking was like, check this out, and just popped them when I worked with them. And this guy, he's the one that gave me the fentanyl sucker. Like, that was the first time I've ever had anything like that. It was a fucking, it tastes like raspberries. He had migraines. And his doctor was just like, he fucking really ratcheted up the dosages and delivery methods. Like, this guy just had every way of doing things. But he would also run out on the 15th day of every month and be on your phone, like, right away. You know, because he still had 15 more days till he could get his refill.
Yeah, I mean, my friend's dad was prescribed a bunch of oxys because he had, like, back problems and stuff. And he would get them, like, whatever day of the month. And he would get, like, a bunch of 40s, a bunch of 20s, a bunch of 10s. And then, I mean, it was, like, his house was like Grand Central Station for a couple days with, like, people going in and out. And then within, like, 3 days, they were all gone, and everybody was just back to scrounging around again.
Yes, yes. Scrounging around is the operative word there, man. I was so pathetic, Dan, that I had a fucking Nextel chirp. And, like, that's how I got, like, I would just fucking, I would chirp, chirp, chirp. If the motherfucker didn't answer, I would alert and then wait till the alert went through and then alert again. And I would just keep alerting this fucking guy. And, like, I was like the opiate addict, I think. Like, the picture of what it is, a cable guy that just, I was so into him. Like, I would have been fine if I could have been able to just get 10s. And I'm not saying you have to take 10 in a day. I would probably be able to take, I would say, 4 10s in a day. But, you know, hey, that's better than heroin. I just think making it available seems like the only real solution now, since, you know, they've restricted it to a point where, like, I had an abscess tooth, and they fucking gave me 6 Vicodin and said take 1 every 6 hours. And I was like, that would never do anything for anybody.
And even like heroin now, I mean, I hear back, you know, from back home, and I mean, you buy hair, like, a lot of time you buy heroin now and you're just doing straight fentanyl.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good, I think that, like, I went and looked for it on, I was on one of those drug marketplaces not too long ago. I'm still too scared to order from them, but sometimes I'll flip onto the dark web and take a look and, yeah, like, fantasize.
I've looked at them. I got a tour thing and I looked at it just because I was curious. But I'll stick to. I mean, the weed I order, you just use a bank transfer and you don't need Bitcoin or anything like that. So I just stick to that.
Right. Yeah. But when you're on there, you start, like, every time I've ever got on there, I've then followed on to the next step of the process, which is, like, how do I get a bunch of Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's the part that always stuck me whenever I had, like, it just seemed like such a hassle.
That's why Brett is like, I mean, he's never done it either because his wife is, like, firmly against it, and it's just, I don't know, when you're married, you don't want to hide your drug purchases from your wife. It gets in a weird spot then.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I mean, like. That was one of the reasons I quit, too, is because I felt like I was spending so much money. And, like, my wife had no idea I was spending $400 a month, which, I mean, probably isn't that bad, but we didn't have that much money.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't married or anything, but when I was doing it, you know, and I lived in Pennsylvania, and working just shitty jobs, and every spare cent I had went to getting it, and I was like, and I had family up here, so I was like, man, I gotta get out, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm going to get clean. I'm going to go ahead and get off of these things, because depending on them is getting too fucking hard.
Yeah, it's like my whole day, you know, I mean, aside from, you know, just working, you know, I was working as much as I could, but every waking moment aside from that was spent, you know, looking for it or doing it, but it was mostly looking for
or
it.
Or counting them. Did you count them as much? Like, I was always counting them, motherfuckers.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, you'd be like, all right, so I got this, I'll do this one tonight, and then that'll be for when I wake up.
My wife would like, she noticed actually after I quit, and we sometimes laugh about it, how like I would get them on the first night and I would be way too generous with them, you know,
just handing them to
fucking everybody. And then within 3 days, I'd be fucking shaking and being like, God damn it. Why did I give away all those pills?
Yeah. Yep,
and it was all really just to prove that I didn't need the pills to other people, I think.
Yeah. Although that is annoying when you run out too quick, but and it works to a certain extent. A lot of the time, sometimes people are assholes, but a lot of the time they'll be like, oh wait, this guy always hooked me up whenever I didn't have any, so I'll help him out. Some people are just assholes and you can't even rely on them for that, but
I mean I knew a lot of people that weren't handing over one even. Like by the end of my time, everybody I was hanging out with was like, we were not sharing at all. It just got so dark, you know?
Yeah.
You could never be like, let's get together and do drugs. And it's like, you better fucking have your own, motherfucker, or I'm not going to hang out with you.
Do you follow the recovery memes pages on Facebook?
I do. They're dark. They're really aggressive, which is it's just surprising to me how aggressive they are.
There's a lot of a subgenre of ones where they like criticize people for doing for using Suboxone or methadone.
Right. Yes. I have noticed that's for weak recovery. I've seen a lot of people talk about subs. And
yeah,
methadone.
Like one was like a guy in a swimming pool pouring a bottle of water on his head. That's like, it's like when you get clean but still take Suboxone.
There's a Suboxone clinic by my house, and they changed the name of it so people didn't know it was a Suboxone clinic. But man, when people are showing up to pick their stuff up, there are a lot of motherfuckers outside of that place smoking.
Yeah, people really don't want those. I mean, they finally did open one in my hometown, but like my ex-girlfriend was on methadone, and she would drive every morning, drive an hour and a half to get her methadone dose.
Yeah, the Suboxone clinic in my neighborhood, they call it a Botox clinic. It's like a Botox and like cosmetic surgery, but also Suboxone.
Oh,
and probably
weird.
Mostly Suboxone. Well, I live in a place where there's a decent amount of money, like around me, not here, but a place where there's a decent amount of money. So there probably are people that need both Botox and Suboxone here.
I was just curious because I didn't know how this stuff worked here, but apparently here they give you your methadone dose at the pharmacy.
That would be great.
So the pharmacies that have it, like a lot of the time, they have like just a lineup of people outside waiting for methadone in the morning.
Man, I am with recovery memes people on the Suboxone. I'm on that train. Well, I just lost somebody recently who did Suboxone for many years, who just relapsed back to heroin, and it probably wasn't much of a jump. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like if it works for you, more power to it. I mean, but a lot of people, it seems like they just use it as like, you know, I'll sell some and then I'll keep some for when I get sick, you know, and I need, you know, and I can't get anything else. But then some people, they actually just, you know, they just take it like normal and it helps them, you know, just live a normal life, you know.
Yeah, you just wish that they could get off of those too, because. I mean, it's still putting yourself in that situation where you have to go to the clinic, and like you said, there are dealers that sell Suboxone too. You know what I mean? There are pill dealers that also, I mean, like I said, I've had old friends ask me if I have subs on Facebook a few times. Like, hey, do you have any? And I'm like, I mean, I don't do those fucking things. I would just do the pills. If I was gonna take something, it'd be Percocets.
Yeah, and the shitty thing is, I mean, it's just, of course, the pharmaceutical companies are so clever because it just shifts the profit. Well, the thing about painkillers is that, like, the reason I think pharmaceutical companies are happy to be, you know, pushing them, even though they were you know they knew they were being abused or whatever, is that they were still getting paid for them. I mean, it wasn't like heroin where, you know, it's coming from another country in a cartel. Like, even if the painkillers are, like, diverted, like, sold by, like, legitimate, you know, people who get them legitimately and just sell them, I mean, the pharmaceutical company's still getting paid for that, right? So they don't give a shit.
Yeah, they don't fucking, as long as they get what they think they deserve for the things, they don't care who is taking, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Suboxone, yeah, that thing, that stuff's just, it's very popular, I think. I worry that it's. I mean, I see people asking for them on Facebook, like just in public on Facebook.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But this, I mean, obviously, like, you know, I come from like a darker place, so maybe it's not as like I was saying earlier. Maybe our experience isn't as common, like our current experience. But man, I have to think that like. I see so many people dying, you know, and like people I fucking know are like 3 people in 2 years have died.
Yeah, man. I mean, out of my group, my crew, you know, like five, six guys. I mean, two of them aren't around anymore from that. I mean, and they were just the people. I mean, the one guy that died. I mean, the first time we both ever did opiates, it was together, you know.
Yeah. One of the guys that I know that died, he got me my first painkillers, and he sold them. He was the guy that sold them to me, got them for me for a long time. Like, I would drive 45 minutes to his house, and we would hang out and do the fucking things. And, like, yeah, you're right. Like, he's gone, and then the other guy I knew was just, he never sold them. He never was, like, I mean, I wouldn't even ever called the guy a fucking criminal. You know what I mean? He was just a troubled dude that, like,
yeah. I mean, when it comes to those type of things, I mean, that's what always pisses me off about the laws where you know you sell somebody you know something and they OD and then you go to prison. Like, it's one thing if you're like the guy who's putting the fentanyl in the dope, you know. But if you're just like, you know, oh, I'll get a bundle or whatever, and I'll, you know, sell two, and I'll get more for my, you know, one free for myself or whatever, like, and then the person ODs, I don't think that's fair. I mean, it's a little different than if it's like, you know, somebody who's like cutting it with dangerous shit.
Well, they're doing that a lot of times on the local news stories here. There are people just begging for the death penalty for heroin dealers. And I'm like, man, I known so many drug dealers, and you, not you specifically, but even those people in those comments probably know drug dealers, and like, they're not, I don't know, man. I never got the vibe that any of my drug dealers wanted me dead, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, there's obviously people who just care about money, and, you know, they just, you know, and they, It's not that they want people to die, but they just figure like, well, you know, if I'm gonna put this fentanyl in this, you know, in the dope, and you know, somebody might die, but there's just gonna be like 20 more people that line up to buy it because they heard the shit's good, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, thank you for doing this for me, Dan. This is fun. I've never had somebody like, I like having you on because you and I have a lot of similar experiences. We kind of grew up in similar places. I think you seem a lot more hard scrabble than I was, but I think that's because you were in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I didn't grow. I mean, a lot of my shit was just due to me being, just having no common sense. I mean, I didn't grow up like really like poor or, you know, underprivileged or anything like that. I was just really stupid.
Me too. That's exactly it. Like, I was my parents made more than most of the people in the neighborhood, but I mean, you're not higher class if you still live in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, I lived in a really working class neighborhood, and my parents would like instill in us like, yeah, we have more money than these people. We're, you know what I mean? But you would then also be like, but I hang out with these people. Like, this is all my people. I'm basically, you're raising me like a working class kid. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, working, I mean, class, I'm, hillbilly white kid, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll always, I grew up in a rural area, and I'll always be like a rural person at heart, I guess.
It's so weird. It's so that's the difference though, Dan, is like I'm suburb, like I was 2 miles away from a mall, and then I could
Yeah.
walk to this mall on these busy roads, but I grew up around just the same people, you know what I mean? We grew up around the same people.
Yep.
Well, thanks for doing this again, man. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, dude. Always glad to be on. I'm so happy to see Street Fight blow up, and I hope 2017 brings you guys even more success.
And you people that are listening, I'm gonna get Dan and Felix on here at the same time, and it's gonna be like fucking Voltron, because you two are the two that I've known probably longer than anybody else on that website.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, man, you can hit stop on a recording.
I'm not the one who's so far away when I feel the snake bite and tear my veins. Never did I wanna be here again, and I don't remember why I came. I'm not. far away.